We are here on our final case this morning, 2020-1078, State ex rel Ohio Attorney General versus Robert Burns et al. For the appellant, we have Mr. Kearney.
Good morning, Madam Chief Justice, and may it please the court, I'd like to reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal. Your Honors, Robert Burns is strictly liable for the public money lost by the charter school he ran for three reasons. First, the statute holds public officials liable if they collected or received public funds. So whatever collect means, it means something different from received. Second, standard definitions of collect include what Burns did here, which was to obtain money for his charter school, even if he had the money sent to a treasurer. And third, liability here is consistent with the common law of over 170 years, which has long held officials liable to protect the public, even when the official is not at fault. And if any of
counsel,
that seems-
counsel, what was Mr. Burns' role?
So he was the CEO of the charter school. And so in that capacity, he was registered as the authorized representative to get online and apply to the Ohio Department of Education for funds. So he's the one who sat down and said, please send my school this money. He also submitted expenditure reports showing that they had spent the money so that the funds could keep flowing. And the Jones affidavit, paragraphs 2-7 says, and Burns never disputes, they could not have gotten this money if he didn't do his part. It's just that when he said, send this money to my school, he said, drop it in our account. And that account was then controlled by a treasurer who is a separate person. And the treasurer reports directly to the board.
Does and not counsel, report. Counsel, it, who misused the money? Who actually misused the money?
Well, the treasurer here was definitely the bad guy. He, you know, pleaded guilty in federal court to embezzlement, no doubt about that. But what this court's cases have always said is even when there's a worse actor around, for example, in Harper, the money was stolen from a treasurer's house. And this court said, you're still on the hook. In Seward, the money was in a bank and the bank failed. And this court said, you're still on the hook. And so this court has always said, strict means strict. And if
but counselor, in all the cases that you're talking about, name one case where the public official has been held liable, responsible, who had no control over the funds.
Well, I'm glad you asked that, Your Honor, because we readily concede there's no case directly on point where liability has been imposed.
And we're talking about over 175,
control.
200 but, years.
On the other hand, Your Honor, it's equally true and just as important that they cannot cite a single case, and we could find none, where someone was let off the hook for lack of control. And the problem with control
Mr.
is-
Mr. Kearney, you cite the common law rule. So let's go back to the common law. Can you find other cases where someone who had no control over money was held liable under the common law rule?
No, they've never been held liable or not liable because it's rare, as far as I can tell, for someone to set something up where they apply for money and don't turn around and receive it.
That's not true. I mean, under your theory, I mean, you know, say you're at a state university, there's all kinds of people who are responsible for filling out forms, asking for different kinds of aid. They may have no responsibility at all for the actual administration of that, but I would be hard pressed to think that we were going to hold some innocent bureaucrat liable just because someone else stole money through no fault of their own, and they had over which they had no supervisory powers.
Well, there are a couple of answers to that, Your Honor. First, I want to stress the importance of the word or, because this court said in Columbia Gas Transmission that when the legislature uses or in the disjunctive, it means both halves mean something. And it's not as if we and our friends on the other side have competing definitions of collect where they say, oh, collect means this, not that. No, they openly say, yeah, we're importing collect and receive together and collapsing it in. And they talk about interpreting the phrase, they say at page 12 of their brief. They never offer a standalone word definition of collect. And
well,
that's wrong.
I guess my question was more about the breadth of the rule that you suggest. I mean, this would make any person at any public institution, any government agency who signed any form asking for someone to pay money to that agency liable despite their having no culpability at all in the funds being misspent?
There are a couple answers to that. First, I understand that does sound broad, but we think that's not going to be a frequent problem. I'll tell you why. And if so, it's for the assembly to fix. First, it's not likely to be a problem because, for example, in this program, the Department of Education doesn't just let a school janitor or the first grade teacher hop online and apply and we say, sure, here's money. The funds are set up so that only someone like a treasurer or CEO is set up to be an authorized representative to seek funds. And so it's not only from the state end of supplying the funding, but
that's not always the case, right? I mean, there you can certainly imagine situations where all kinds of people are allowed to submit invoices to someone have no managerial responsibility at all.
Well, and that is why if the legislature thinks that is too strict, they could go in. For example, my friends on the other side point to the special statute about treasurers at regular traditional public schools that specifically gives circumstances where strict liability is softened. That shows the legislature knows how to do it. And again, the problem is any of these readings
Council, didn't Mr. Burns, his duties included the general supervision and the management authority of the school? This is and personnel. I mean, he was more hands-on than the university president or the grant writer or any of the other examples here. And he also had the authority to approve budget expenditures on behalf of the school. And he was active with the electronic accounting system that was set up through the Department of Education, was he not?
That is all true. And what it shows is to the extent that there was any hole in that system where the treasurer could waste money or misappropriate or embezzle that he didn't see, the strict liability creates an incentive for a public official such as Mr. Burns to say, hey, I know I might be held liable, so let me set up systems like dual signature authority, like a lot of
institutions. None of the things the Chief Justice mentioned are applicable to your legal theory, are they? I mean, your legal theory is based just on the fact that there was a signature on a form. It doesn't matter whether it would apply equally to someone who had no supervisory responsibility over those funds.
Well, that's true, Your Honor, in that it turns on the word collect. And again, that's the legislature's choice. If we make receipt a prerequisite, then we're openly saying that you could just cross out the word collect and have the statute say received and nothing would change. And we're told by the legislature in 1.49, and we're told by this court in Columbia Gas Transmission, we shouldn't do that. I am struggling to come up with—
We've got so many different interpretations of the word collect. I guess going back to what Mr. Burns could have done, I mean, so he has no supervisory responsibilities over Mr. Shy. He didn't hire him. His contract was not with him. He didn't control the funds. What is it that he could have required what could he have done to better protect the funds? So, because yes, he's bringing in the money, he's getting federal and state monies. Arguably, if he didn't do so, he would be derelict in his duties to the school. So what is it that could have been done that should make him liable for the theft of these funds?
I'm happy to address that and also back up and talk about your part of the question about the definition of collect. Okay. First, what he could have done is he could have said, hey, I'm only going to take this job if I have secondary check writing authority so that you need two signatures and this guy can't send money out without me.
And do you have an example of any public official who's done that?
I don't have anything in this record, but I'm aware that the auditor recommends to local governments dual check signature authority routinely to places when a local clerk, village clerk or treasurer runs off with money. The first thing the auditor says is, why don't you require two signatures before public money goes out the door? But the other thing about those incentives is if he knows, like any CEO, that the best laid plans of mice and men or of CEOs and treasurers might go awry, let's set up controls about that. Is the alternative is instead of putting the liability on him is to leave the public holding the bag. And that's why
it's interesting, Counselor, you said that because the auditor, the state auditor in 2014, in a bulletin said that public officials also should be aware that they could be personally liable for illegal expenditures of public money under Ohio law. Any public official who either authorizes an illegal expenditure of public funds or supervises the accounts of the public office from which such illegal expenditure is made is strictly liable. And goes on to say public officials controlling public funds or property are liable for the loss. So again, that's the auditor, who of course is now the attorney general.
The important thing about all of that language, just like some of the case law that uses the word control, is it never says you're liable only if you control. It's true, if you control money, which comes from receive, you can't control it if you haven't received it. If you receive money, you'll be held liable. It's also true that if you collect money, you'll be held liable. So
where
this is reminding people about one of the prongs, which
But where is that? That's not in this bulletin. That's not in any case law that you've cited.
It's in the statute. And that's the key, the word collect. For example, if you look at 9.38, the companion statute about depository duties, mm-hmm. that one uses the word receive or receipt 9 times, never uses the word collect. So the legislature, and it used to, and my friend on the other side points to that statute as the origin of this phrase, collect or receive. So the legislature knows.
Counselor, but if I say that you ate or consumed your meal pretty quickly, do those two verbs have different meanings for you?
Well, Your Honor, there are verbs where sometimes there are two parallel words. But here we recognize there are lots of times you can receive something where you never applied for it. Things are on autopilot. Things just get sent to you. So received and collect are not like given, bequeathed, where they're just two parallel.
Well, now you're swapping out the word applied for collect.
Well, Your Honor, collect, the first fundamental principle we should, I hope, all agree on is whatever collect means, even if I'm wrong, collect has to mean something that doesn't zero it out to nothingness. And and that means receipt can't be, whatever the formula is for collect, it can't require actual receipt. And so that's where control, which is a word not in the statute, doesn't apply. And think about common usage. If someone posts something online that says, I'm collecting for charity, here's the link. And the money might go directly to that charity and to their bank account, but we still say, I'm collecting for charity. That's a common usage. And as between competing dictionary definitions, we have to favor the one that gives meaning to every word.
I mean, it isn't really the definitions certainly overlap, but they cover kind of two senses of the same thing, right? You receive something there's nothing proactive about that. Collecting is taking a step to go out and gather things up for you, right? And there's no reason we can't think the legislature wanted to make sure that both senses of the words were covered.
Right.
But I don't get the next step that you take to say, well, that has to mean that something can be collected that has not been received by the person. And we, you know, in ordinary English, we use overlapping senses of a word all the time, right? One's more specific, but when you collect something, you also receive it. But that doesn't necessarily mean that the legislature meant there to draw this big distinction there, does it?
Well, Your Honor, sure, they overlap. No one doubts there are factual situations where you've both collected and received, and in life too, that collect and receive can overlap. The difference is, there's a difference between saying overlap and saying collect is merely a subset of received and has no independent life of its own. And that's the rule this court said in Columbia Gas, and more broadly in the give effect to every term, is if we adopt the reading where collect includes receipt, then we are admitting that you could just blue pencil it out of the statute and life would go on with no change. And this court said, we don't do that. The legislature tells us not to do that. And also, if there's softening to do, the legislature can do that. They've done that for public school treasurers. They could do that for charter school CEOs if they want it. They haven't. The rule is you keep it strict, let the legislature soften it. And in addition, think back to all of these cases where someone was robbed at their house or a treasurer put money in a bank and the bank failed. Those are totally sympathetic situations. No one doubts that. And this court said, well, we're putting the strict in strict liability. And if it seems too harsh, we so, leave so it to the legislature.
The attorney general has various people that work for it that collect money, right? They collect money that's owed to the state. Now, if they collect that money and someone in the state, and these are simply people who just are collection attorneys, right?
I'm on the hook too.
So that person is going to be on the hook if down the road, someone else in the attorney general's office misspends that money.
I'm out of time. If I can quickly answer that. Yes. And that's why we have things in place. Office policies.
I'm sorry.
So that losses are repaid, so it doesn't roll down to
Mr.
me.
Mr. Cardi, hold on. I'm sorry. Did you say yes to Justice DeLine's question?
Yes, and it does seem awfully strict. And I admit that's look. I'm putting myself arguably in jeopardy by doing that because I work on all sorts of cases. But I also know we have institutions in place so that that money is protected step to step, so that that's not going to happen, and we don't have a spate of cases going after every low-level employee. But if there is some reason to distinguish high level from low level, certainly Burns meets that here. And that's why, although we don't think control is required, the trial court and the dissent both said he exerted a form of control when he told the agency, please send the money to this account. He directed it to where it was to go.
Final question, because I know you're running out of time. Does it matter whether the misappropriated funds have been recouped from the perpetrator?
Oh, sure. And we have collected some. That's why the amount we're requesting is only down to, I think, 60,000 from what was originally, you know, he helped obtain over $400,000. I forget the exact amount of misappropriation found in the finding, but we don't double collect. If someone else steps up first, and that's why all these other people are usually not on the hook, but the gentleman who stole the money and went to prison might not be collectible from beyond a certain point. And I don't want to get this wrong, so I defer to my friend on the other side. I think there might have been something in the record about an insurance policy that might or might not be in play. But in any case, we just want to impose a liability on him because it's him or the general public. And this court should hold the public protected and put the incentive on someone who at least can do something about it. And so we ask the court to reverse and reinstate the trial court's finding of summary judgment in our favor.
Thank you. Ms. Cooper.
Thank you, Your Honor. Chief Justice O'Connor, and may it please the court. My name is Janet Cooper, and I represent the appellee Robert Burns, who during 2009 and 2010 was the director of New City Community School here in Dayton. This case involves the circumstances under which a public official can be held personally liable for the loss of public funds. Ohio law applicable to this case preceded Ohio's statehood. It's consistent throughout the United States. Succinctly and consistently stated by this court over multiple decisions is the rule that public officials are personally liable for the loss of public funds they control. The common law was codified in Ohio in 1985 with the enactment of Revised Code 9.39, and the first sentence reads, all public officials are liable for all public money received or collected by them or their subordinates under color of office.
So if what that really means is control, why wouldn't that language just be in the statute?
Because this statute was codifying the common law, and the common law was clear that control of funds was a requirement.
If the common law was control of funds, why not, and this was codifying the common law, wouldn't the statute say control of funds?
Well, I think for years, the phrase received or collected had been used in Ohio statutory lexicon with respect to the fiscal management of the state to mean possession and control of funds. For hundreds of years, in cases that literally span three centuries, this court has consistently held that public money in the hands of or under the control of a public official constitutes a trust fund for which the official as trustee should be held responsible to the same degree as the trustee of a private trust fund. This court reaffirmed this principle in its 2010 decision in Cordray versus International Preparatory School by stating that it is firmly entrenched in Ohio law that public officials are liable for the public funds they control. Now in Cordray, the issue before the court was whether an employee of a community school is a public official within the meaning of 9.39. The court answered this in the affirmative and then said, but there's a factual issue that needs to be determined. And that is whether this particular public official was personally liable for the loss of public funds and whether he received or collected them under color of office within the meaning of revised code 9.39. So the dispute in Cordray was uncertainty about whether that public official was actually employed as the treasurer of the community school. And this court said, giving guidance to the lower court when issuing the remand, that the label placed on the position is not what controls the outcome. What matters are the duties of the position. And then the court said what the duties were that result in personal liability. And I quote, it's the public official's obligation to account for and disburse according to law monies that have come into his or her hands by virtue of being such public officer. Now the issue in this case is identical to the issue in the Cordray case on remand, and applying this court's guidance to the undisputed facts of this case compels the conclusion that Robert Burns is not subject to personal liability for the loss of public funds belonging to New City School, because no public monies ever came into his hands by virtue of his employment, and having no control, he had no obligation nor indeed ability to account for and disperse these
funds. Counsel, did he direct where that money was going to be deposited once the state said, you're getting this money? Because he applied for it. And I would imagine on the application, there is some indication of where that money should be transferred to, should the application be approved.
The funding scheme, no, is the short answer to the question. The funding scheme was set up by the Ohio Department of Education. Grant funds are applied for, budgets are drafted, and then once the budget is approved, there are two clicks of a computer mouse that are required on the department's website to approve those expenditures and release the funds directly to the bank accounts.
All right, who does that? Who does that two clicks?
One was Robert Burns for New City School, and the other was Carl Shy, the treasurer.
So, okay, they both clicked?
It required two authorizations, yes. But okay. That was an ODE system. It was not set up by Robert Burns.
Yeah, I understand that. To me, that sounds like he was integral to securing those funds and directing where they got deposited, because that's what Ohio required.
That's what Ohio required, correct.
All right, so he collected those funds and he saw to it that the bank account of the organization that he was he CEO? Was that his role here?
Director was his title.
All right, but he saw to it that money went to the bank account of the institution that he was a director for.
Well, that was all set up in the system. He didn't set that up. He didn't open a bank account. He didn't say, pay the funds here.
Oh, that's irrelevant.
Okay.
But he's the one that had to facilitate the transfer of the money from the state to the coffers of his charter school.
He approved release of the funds, a responsibility he shared with Carl Shy.
Okay, but it doesn't say he had to have sole responsibility in the statute, does it?
No, but I don't believe that the click of that mouse constituted collection within the meaning of 9.39.
Where's collection defined?
It is not defined, except as if the common law existed at the time that it was codified.
Okay.
If he participated in the budgeting process, isn't he designating how those funds are being spent?
Supposed to be spent, yes.
Does that count?
Well, he wasn't responsible for misspending those funds, nor did he have any control over them being misspent. He approved the lawful expenditure of public funds. but he did not then carry that, those orders out because he had no authority to do that.
Thank you.
Now, New City's Board of Trustees is the one that gave control over all fiscal matters of the school, including its bank accounts, to Carl Shy. You know, the state says that Robert Burns set it up so the funds would go to New City's bank accounts. He didn't set that up. That was set up by the board and by the treasurer. Mr. Shy was not an employee of New City School. He was an independent contractor appointed by the board to serve as the designated fiscal officer for the school pursuant to revised code 3314.011. At no time did he report to Mr. Burns. He always reported directly to the board. His physical office was not located at New City School. Instead, he performed his work on behalf of New City, as well as a number of other Ohio community schools, from his home in Columbus, Ohio.
Counsel, how long did it take before $400,000 was determined to be missing by the audit?
There was not an audit that said $400,000 was lost. It was in the neighborhood of $45,000.
Oh, 45?
Yes. Carl Shy stole upwards of $1 million from Ohio community schools. He was in the process of being sentenced when the audit report in this case was issued for much of that. The $45,000 that was attributed to New City later, after he was sentenced, is what we're talking about in this case.
Okay, all right. But again, my question, he's pilfering money. He's taking money that should have been spent on, you know, for accounts or whatever was in the budget that directed this money had to be spent on. How long did it take him to do this and then be found out?
The audit report was issued May 12th, 2012, 2 years after New City closed. And the actions took place in the 2009-10 fiscal year.
And according to what's here, I thought it was $65,000 and not $45,000.
Well, there have been interest and penalties assigned since that time. I'm kind of lost track about what the exact amount was.
Okay, thank you.
So the attorney...
Are you aware of any reason why the misappropriation of funds would not have been discovered a lot sooner?
Well, he didn't advertise that he was stealing public money.
Sure.
And there isn't anything in the record. I will say there was a lot of chaos associated with Mr. Shy's activities as treasurer of all community schools, which came out later. Ohio was not paid unemployment taxes on time. Workers' comp premiums were not paid on time. Paychecks for employees were not paid on time because he was shifting money between one community school and another to meet whatever needs were critical at that particular time.
And neither Mr. Burns or any of the other directors had any supervisory or control powers or features or any way to hold Mr. Shy accountable?
That's absolutely true. Mr. Burns took his job with specific job duties, and they did not include supervision of Mr. Shy or his activity.
Supervising him. Who was supervising Mr. Shy?
He reported directly to the board with whom he had been appointed by the board as an independent contractor for the school.
And was he giving them false reports?
I don't know the answer to that.
Was he accountable to each board, each school's board? He was an independent contractor for everything?
I don't know that is the way it was set up in every community school, but it was certainly set up that way at New City.
At New City. Okay, thank you.
So let's talk about the disjunctive or between the terms in the statute and why that means they don't need to have exactly separate and distinct meanings with no overlap. So the Attorney General is saying that Robert Burns collected public money when he triggered the release of public funds to the bank account. And the trial and appellate courts in this case did consult dictionaries to define the two terms, as did the Cuyahoga County Common Police Court on remand from the Cordray case. Well, they each consulted different dictionaries, and not surprisingly, they arrived at different conclusions. The Attorney General accuses Mr. Burns of contending that the two terms mean the same thing and of misreading the case law by reading the requirement of control into the phrase collected or received. Well, first and foremost, it was not Mr. Burns who read the requirement of control into the case law. This court used that very word repeatedly in its decisions, most recently in Cordray, in summarizing Ohio law, which he characterized as so settled that it hardly needed to be restated. But Mr. Burns is not contending that received and collect are synonymous terms. Collect is an active verb, as Justice DeWine pointed out. It encompasses a variety of potential activities to come into possession of funds, while receive is a passive verb, which requires no action in order to possess funds. Both terms, nonetheless, include the concept of possession and control. It is Mr. Burns's position that there is overlap in these two definitions, and the phrase received or collected embodies the rule of common law that public officials are liable for the loss of public funds they control.
Well, counsel, if you are collect something, that doesn't necessarily mean it's going to be under your control. And I think the example was given, I forget what justice gave it, that if you put, for example, a GoFundMe request on, you know, the internet, that money doesn't go to you. There's a bank account that people will send it to, and you're not touching it. You're just, you know, putting out the request for money, and you're, in other words, you're trying to collect money to go into an account that is not your personal bank account.
That's correct. But under what legal theory would the person who sends the GoFundMe request be held liable if those funds that go to that separate account then are squandered in some way or lost? And that's the problem here. I haven't collected the funds. I've assisted in the process of collection, but I haven't collected them because I haven't received them.
Oh, no. Now, so you're saying if you're collecting something, in order to be liable, you also have to receive it.
Within the meaning of 9.39, yes, sir. Yes, ma'am. That is exactly what I'm saying.
Okay. All right. That makes it clearer.
Thank you. There is no indication that the General Assembly intended to alter the requirement of control in enacting 9.39. It is clear in formal opinions issued by the Ohio Attorney General and bulletins issued by the Ohio Auditor of State that these two offices have historically understood 9.39 in exactly the same way that they now claim the appellee is mistaken about, that receive or collect means custody or control for personal liability to attach. And I would call your attention to a 1994 Ohio Attorney General opinion where it is clear the Attorney General Attorney General called the language of 9.39 plain and unambiguous. And he said public officials are held liable only for public money that they or their subordinates receive or collect. Thus, a public official will be held personally liable if public funds that come into his possession or custody in his official capacity are lost, making it clear that the phrase receive or collect meant possession or custody of public money.
So stopping right there. So that is the reason then that some public officials need to have a bond, because the bond then covers their personal responsibility for those monies lost, correct?
That's correct. And in Ohio, treasurers and Carl Shai was required to have a bond, but people who work in the capacity that Robert Burns did have never been required to be bonded because they didn't have any custody or control over public funds.
Thank you.
The law governing—
Thank you, Ms. Cooper. You've used your time.
Thank you.
Mr. Carney, let's see what you have left here.
Zero.
I'm shocked, none. Let's give you a minute.
Thank you, Your Honor. Two quick points on text and the facts. On the text, I appreciate the acknowledgement from counsel that I believe I heard that said her definition of collect includes receipt. And what that means is that collect has no independent meaning. Now, she also referred to whether there's no overlap. Our position is not that there's no overlap. There's lots of overlap. It's just that, like a Venn diagram, there's a lot of overlap, but there's some receipt that does not involve collecting, and there's also some collecting that does not involve receipt, because that's the only way to keep both words alive. And if she can't offer any definition of collect that doesn't just collapse into receipt, then we're admitting we're deleting terms from a statute and we ought not do that. As far as the facts and that two clicks is, yes, ODE required both of them to click to take the money. If they would have done the same thing on their end and required dual signatures or dual turn the nuclear keys to have money go out the door, then we wouldn't be in this situation because he would have known every time Shai was spending money. And that's what we want to incentivize. Take care of the money the state gives you, spend it on the children, and don't let it go out the back door. And if you don't like your fate being tied to someone who's untrustworthy, don't take a job where you dual click together and then wash your hands and walk away. He should be held strictly liable. And if the General Assembly wants to change that, that's their job, not this court's.
Thank you both, counsel. We will take the matter under advisement and you will be notified of our decision. Marshall, will you please adjourn court?